99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
Happy Thursday, Birds. Welcome into the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Mikey Vernelli joined by Braden Fogerson and Ben Hootie. And, of course, Mr. Dylan Skeen of the WZND News and Sports team of TV10 News and of Redbird Productions and of the Illinois State Roller Hockey Squadron. Am I missing anything?
I think that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, it's only fitting we bring in one of our biggest hockey guys on the ZND staff. You were scheduled to come in tonight anyway, but... A certain member of the Blackhawks is coming back to break a 7-game skid. Oh yeah, the most highly anticipated rookie in quite possibly years in the NHL.
Oh, since 2015?
Yeah, so we start there with Connor Bedard returning to the Blackhawks tonight, Skeen. How important is that? And that kind of changes our first segment as we start the show.
Oh, it's absolutely going to change. I mean, the game tonight for sure, but for the rest of the season, it was kind of a question mark if he was going to come back even next Monday. They were thinking we're going to reevaluate next Monday. Maybe he'll be back by then, but we'll have to see. And then just kind of out of nowhere, there was a tweet from NHL insider Elliot Friedman this morning saying, oh, there's a possibility he's coming back.
Yeah.
And I was floored. And then, like, just hours later, Ben Pope was like, yep, he's going to play.
Hasn't played since January 5th with that jaw injury. Could be wearing that bubble dome, that youth hockey helmet tonight. And if he is, we'll have to see what could happen from Bubble Bedard. Ben, I know you were talking about, before we came on, I'll put you on the spot, the 7-game losing streak.
Yeah.
What does it mean for the Blackhawks? Yes, they're not trying to make the playoffs or anything, but this is pretty important to get your guy back here in mid-February.
No, yeah, I mean, at this point, this playoffs, it's out of the question.
Yeah, they're looking to tank pretty much, but you still want to see him play.
Right, and that's the big thing. He continues to develop. We continue to see him get reps in National Hockey League, and, you know, he looked really good before he got injured, so... It's going to be nice to have him back. Hopefully he doesn't hurt the tank too much for Celebrini, but because it'd be nice to see those two paired up with each other next year. But yeah, it'll be good to see the kid back. It's crazy. I hate calling other athletes kids, but he's legitimately...
He is a kid.
He's 3 years younger than me, so I have every right to do so. But yeah, it's exciting to have him back, and that's been the best part about this whole season, just seeing him develop.
Now, Skeen, I'm assuming you have the same feeling on who you want the Blackhawks to take in the draft as Ben.
Oh, is that correct? Absolutely. I mean, so, I'm actually a huge prospect guy. Not a lot of people, because I do that on my own time, but I follow the draft, specifically NHL draft, very, very thoroughly. I have my own preseason rankings, like, very, very early for the draft. I like to follow other people who cover the draft, all of that. So I actually have my whole, like, I have like a top 16 right now for that draft already.
Oh, wow. So tell me what makes this guy special and how he's going to fit into this Blackhawks team.
So Celebrini, if we do get the first overall pick, Macklin Celebrini is not on the same level as a Connor Bedard, but he is on a tier above his own compared to the other guys in this draft. His edge work is incredible. The biggest thing to find in players that are insanely good is they have a pace of play that's just above everyone else. You can kind of tell. Like, even when it comes to points, like, if you could see two players have the same point total and you could watch them play and you just know one of them's just on another level. And Celebrini is one of those guys who just every facet of the game, he has the pace for an NHL mindset. He is incredible. Some other guys, if the Hawks don't get number one overall, Ivan Demidov, straight out of the MHL from Russia, he has some of the best skating, edge work, and creativity in this draft, and I feel like the creativity with Bedard is like how can that fail? Creativity and Bedard is just a gift from the heavens. It's just beautiful. And then there's a couple other guys like Caden Lindstrom. He's 6'4" and incredibly agile, so that's something you see a lot. Berkeley Catton, kind of your regular like fast-paced, good guy. And then someone like Artyom Levchinov, currently playing for Michigan State in the NCAA, he has just really good size, really good play, and really good point production. So there's definitely a couple guys, even if the Hawks don't get first overall, that would not be bad consolation prizes.
We look at the bottom of the league in the Hawks and Sharks, and it's fun to flirt with draft prospects, but looking at the top of the league, what have you seen from some of these teams that are just really streaking right now? They're really putting together solid season. I mean, two teams in the Canucks and Bruins that are both flirting with 40 wins.
Well, first of all, I think it would be amazing if those two teams continue to be the two best teams, because I don't know if you remember, but from 2011, after that Stanley Cup final, the riots and everything, imagine if those two teams like meet again.
Yeah.
Like, that would be ridiculous. But specifically the Vancouver Canucks, I was 1 year late. I had made a bet with my buddy that the Canucks were going to be really good 2 years ago, and everyone was laughing at me, and now they're really good, and I was just 1 year too early. But yes, they have been incredible, specifically their offense. Their defense, that's what the Bruins are really good at. Their defensive structure is the best in the NHL. The Canucks, they have the best offensive structure. All of their best players and everything, their skating in particular, is just mesmerizing. You look at Quinn Hughes on the blue line, and that man dances like a ballerina. It is incredible. So they just have such a, again, as I was talking about earlier with Celebrini, a high pace of play, specifically in the offensive zone, that a lot of teams can't match. And when you're getting wheeled around or just walked, basically, in the defensive zone, there's not much you can do.
Yeah. On Ben and I's baseball podcast, we talked a ton this year about teams that have a high run differential. Like, the Atlanta Braves were so good last year because they had, like, a never-before-heard run differential. In hockey, how important can you look at that goal differential? Because I'm looking at the stats right here, and the Canucks are leaps and bounds above everybody at plus 58 on the season. I mean, the Bruins are at 42. So the Canucks are not only winning more games, they are blowing out opponents.
Oh yeah, it's they when they have a good game, they have a good game, and that's honestly why the game earlier for the Blackhawks, when they only lost 4-2, everyone was very mad about that. But yeah. I was like, it's the Canucks. Like, letting in four goals to the Canucks is a win for a team that is very much in the bottom of the league right now.
Yeah.
I do think that goal differential is important for teams to look at, especially when going into the playoffs. But it isn't everything, because there are those few games that are blowouts, as you're talking about. And so it's less of, when looking at goal differential, it's less of, oh, these are the better teams, and more of, this is the team that when they win, they blow them out.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, that style is less suited for the playoffs. Teams that are really good in, close matchups,
right,
those are the teams that do really good in the playoffs. So honestly, if anything, those teams that have a really high goal differential don't necessarily do amazing in the playoffs. Look at last year with the Boston Bruins. They had one of the best goal differentials of all time. They lost in the first round.
Yeah.
Admittedly, that was an insane upset, but still, a goal differential isn't everything, but it is something to look at.
One of the highest winning teams ever getting upset in the first round of the eventual Florida Panthers. Went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals, though. Ben, you had something for Skeet?
Yeah, so one of the most talked about teams in the NHL every year is the Oilers, because of Connor McDavid. He's the best player in the world. They came out this year really bad, and there were rumors that McDavid was getting traded, even though we all knew it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since that's happened, it feels like they just can't lose. Where do you put their chances finally to maybe potentially come out on top this year?
Finally this year. So my opinions on the Oilers have kind of always been the same, and it hasn't changed through this small slump and then bad stuff. It kind of showed what I'd already been saying. And I will say, actually, with their winning streak they have, it's kind of been a little different. And here's what I'll say. So my problem with the Oilers is that they aren't necessarily very well built.
Mm-hmm.
They have McDavid and they have Leon Draisaitl, who are two of the best players in the league. And so you put those two together and they're going to score a lot.
Yeah.
And it feels like for the past probably 5 years, they haven't really had much of a supporting cast. They've been getting middling goaltending, less than middling defense, and middling depth.
So very when you top heavy.
Exactly. When you're middling in everything except for the fact that you have Connor McDavid, McDavid will bring you somewhere, but he cannot carry a team to a Stanley Cup. Now, that's what's been a little bit different this year. I've liked they've actually had gotten some more contributions from their bottom six or their forwards, which is what I like. Contributions from those depth forwards is how you win a cup. However, I still have incredible problems with their defense. The addition of Matthias Ekholm last year, incredible, great idea by GM Ken Holland there. But they have Matthias Ekholm, they have Darnell Nurse. Those two guys are good. Beyond that, I'm forgetting Evan Bouchard. That's a good top three, and that's a top three that can bring you places, but you need good bottom six. And I'm telling you, Cody Ceci in the top four is not going to bring you anywhere. All right. That's all I can say. If they load up on defense before the playoffs and their bottom six continues playing well and Stuart Skinner, their goalie, continues going off as he has in the past 20 games, then I say, okay, they have a really good shot at the playoffs.
there's this resurgence, though. Sorry to cut you off. There's this resurgence of Evander Kane, is what I've seen. And the stats don't show it, but it seems like every time I watched a game during their streak, he was at least out there. I mean, it's hard not to play well when you're playing with the two players you named off, Draisaitl and McDavid. But Evander Kane at one point was really in the dumps in his NHL career, and he seems to be a nice cog to this Oilers team.
Well, that's the biggest thing with Evander Kane is he kind of plays the game on a similar level as like a Tkachuk. So the value he brings is not solely in his points. He's also one of those aggressors. He's going to get under people's skin on the other opponent's team. He's more physical. Like, those are the stuff that, honestly, I think the Oilers needed more of before they got him. And in his early years, he was kind of that, but now he's really started to both click chemistry wise with McDavid and Draisaitl, but also show that more physical edge. And I think he's definitely one of the better pieces of that team. Another one that I think goes underrated a lot is Zach Hyman. He is incredible. He is underrated because he commonly plays with superstars, and he's definitely more of a complimentary piece. But if a complimentary piece can put up 80 points, I think you start having to look at him as a superstar as well, even if he is complimentary.
This Kane's played for a lot of terrible teams. Had a hat trick against the Ducks a couple days ago. Braden, not to cut you off before.
No, you're good. What I want to know is someone that's also a fan of a sport that, in my opinion, is not nearly as popular as it deserves. How did you get started in hockey, and you know, how did you follow it, and when did you start following it?
Well, I started a little bit later than a lot of people did. I watched the Stanley Cups in 2010, 2013, and 2015, but 2010 I was 8. I was probably 7 because it's earlier in the year. So I was 7. I didn't know what really hockey even was. So I didn't really follow much of the 2010s, didn't follow much of 2013. I followed a good amount in the 2015 Stanley Cup playoffs, but I kind of didn't really watch in 16 and 17. The end of 17, a famous trade happened with the Brandon Saad Artemi Panarin trade, which is go down as one of the worst Hawks trades of all time.
Yep.
However, that was the trade that got me back into hockey, because Brandon Saad, were on a not in a visual medium right now, but you can't tell right now, but I'm wearing a Brandon Saad jersey.
He is
my favorite player. And so him coming back onto the team sparked my interest. I went to the home opener, and that year was the year that they scored 10-1 over the Pittsburgh Penguins in the home opener, who were the defending Stanley Cup champions. And let me tell you, there is no better game to go to for someone who's going to their basically first Hawks game. And ever since then, I've been just addicted. I've been following every game, watching every game, incredibly invested in just in hockey in general. And I just kind of never let go after that game.
How often do you get to go to Hawks games now?
Well, since I'm down here at ISU, obviously it's a bit of a hike to go there. You still can go. Like, one of my friends is actually going to the game today. He's one of my roommates. But it's a little bit of a hike. So normally when it's spring break, and specifically Christmas break, I went 4 times over this Christmas break. I get them in.
We were at the same
game
one time this break. I love that student rush deal they do, where they give out student prices for tickets. I'm definitely gonna try and keep my Ilstu email with the Blackhawks for as long as possible.
Honestly, I didn't even know they did that. You gotta hook me up.
Sign up online, and they text you if there's ever like an abundance of tickets still available, like the day before. And so I went to a game during break because of that. It was awesome.
That's nice. so nice because the Cardinals don't do that or anything, but a lot of the Chicago teams
Cubs do.
I guess they don't have to bribe college students to get to go to their games. People just go to St. Louis games.
Was that all just one long dig at the Chicago
team? Midway through, I decided I'd pivot. But,
okay, got it.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to pivot as well when we come back. 3 up, 3 down here on the Red Zone. Three up, three down. Steve Seath. A terrible pick last week. He made fun of me so long for picking the 80% wrong. Our very first week of it, I picked the 80% wrong. He picked against the Redbirds, and the Redbirds won. Against the Trees, the Sycamores, against Robbie Nur, literally the focus of our episode 2 weeks ago, Indiana State and Robbie Avila. Oh, man, it feels good. Steve got that one wrong. He picked Indiana State to beat Illinois State at, what was the clip on that one? Let's see, 96% was the his over 80. He lost it. He claims today, when I talked to him, he's never lost an over 80 pick. They've, of course, done 3 up, 3 down in years past. But, of course, this year and years past, he's never missed an 80% or more, except the Redbirds. So that's why you don't bet against the Redbirds. That's all I'm saying. But we invite Dylan Skeen on as our guest today for 3 up, 3 down. And we will start with Steve's first pick, looking to make up for it. But first, we'll take a look at the standings. Thank you, Ben. Ben really wanted me to talk about the standings because he's at 9-3 on the season. And he is, we're batting 1,000 in MVC games too, 2-0.
I know. And I might not be good at picking football games, but I could pick college basketball games. 4-2 and down. I picked 4-2 in upsets. So.
Yeah. Good stuff.
I know.
Steve, 8-4 on the season, including that loss. I should not be one to talk. 7-5. I also lost an 8%. Norfolk State, worst thing they've done all season. And then Braden at 7-5, also on the year. Guest has not picked yet, but Dylan Skeen will hold that honor today as he is our first guest picker for 3 Up 3 Down. We start with Steve, his first matchup, 2 of Thursdays he has today, Thursday the 15th, the day after Valentine's Day, Singles Awareness Day, but the recently married Steve Cease goes with 6 p.m. on Flow Sports, Towson versus William and Mary. Towson is the favorite at 78%. Towson is the Steve Cease pick. Wow, another irrelevant game. But it works. It seems to work sometimes. I will go with my next one.
There's a method to his madness.
There is a method. I'll go with my first pick. I'm pretty proud of this week. I got a lot of Big Ten basketball starting with tonight at 7:30 on the Big Ten Network. Minnesota visits Purdue. Purdue at 96.7%. Give me the Boilermakers. Don't call them Purdue like I do for college football.
I don't really have to say much more because I picked the same exact game with Purdue winning. Just wanted an easy one that hopefully is a nice win to add to that win total.
Boom.
So, yeah, give me the Boilermakers.
Dylan Skeen.
For my first, I chose UAlbany at UMBC. You know, got to get the two dog games going. And I picked the over there. I went UMBC. I know a lot of people picking the overs that are pretty high, but I wanted the dog game. You know, I wanted the dog game. So let's go. Let's see UMBC. Let's see the. They were the ones that upset Virginia Tech.
Yeah, years ago. Yeah,
Virginia. Right? Virginia. My
52% on the up on that one, but a close up and a good pick for Dylan Skeen. Braden Fulkerson.
I have the same game. I just have a different result. I picked the upset in that one, but it's a close game. So we'll get to see. You know, one of us is right, one of us is wrong. So
you two picked the same game and Ben and I picked the same game? It, like Skeen said in the first segment, you don't have a visual medium right now, but we are sitting on opposite sides of the table too, depending on who picked what. We didn't even do that on purpose.
They picked vice versa of each other.
They did pick vice versa.
Both picked Purdue.
You and I both went with Purdue. We move on to Steve Cease, who said, why am I losing my spot on his game? Oh, I was still on Braden's. I was like, he did not pick UMBC. No. Steve is going with another game tonight, 10 o'clock tip on CBS, the nightcap. Get your PJs on and your stocking gown and everything. Pepperdine and St. Mary's. St. Mary's favored at 98%.
Steve, this is the game he wanted Mary's. So bad he cost himself the Illinois State game because he wanted to pick this one and we called it out.
Yeah.
I
forgot
about
that.
That.
Yeah. This is true. He tried to pick this last week.
So we played defense.
Yeah. We literally called a flag on him and then he had to go for it on fourth down and he missed. Because we literally played defense. Excellent work, guys. hopefully this time it works.
The defense.
For him. As we move on to my pick after Steve's pick 2 weeks in the making, I'm going with Duke and Florida State. If at the Seminoles, Duke is the favorite. Duke is my pick, 73%. Duke has played well this year, and they've gotten some gritty wins. So I'm taking the Blue Devils.
I'm going to stay in the Big Ten on Saturday. I love picking Saturday games. That's usually like majority of my board. I don't know why. But Saturday,
well, you get to actually sit and watch them. Yeah, I agree.
At 1:15 on the Big Ten Network, Wisconsin at Iowa. Wisconsin is currently ranked, but they've been struggling of late. So I'm going to take Iowa at home with the upset. They're at a 57.9% clip. So kind of a coin toss, but I'll go with the Hawkeyes.
Ever since Wisconsin lost to Purdue, it seems like things have gone downhill just a tad. Move on to Dylan Skeen.
Well, I have the exact same as that. Let me tell you, I got the Wisconsin-Iowa game. I also have Iowa because I've seen those deficiencies that Wisconsin's had. I think Iowa's got it.
It's a Big Ten themed episode here on the Red Zone. Braden Fulkerson.
I'm going to paraphrase Dan McLaughlin here and say, St. Louis Billikens basketball is going to lose to VCU. They're a 74.5.
All that to make them lose.
They're going to lose, yeah. I'm going to take that, yeah.
I thought you were taking St. Louis at the 25% for a second. No, VCU at the 74.5% pick. Steve's third pick, a Saturday matchup. Ben's favorite, as he said, TCU versus Kansas State at Kansas State. They are the favorite. They are favorited by nearly a coin flip, 1% off at 51%. Steve's going with TCU, though. He's going with the underdog pick to call it a down, even though it's 49%. Excellent, smart pick by Steve Cease. Lord knows he needs it after losing his 80 last week.
Ben, what about your own pick?
All right, fine. I'll go mine first. Marquette and UConn on Fox on Saturday. I'm going with UConn because they are the favorite at 76%, 0.8%, Ben.
Could be one of the games of the year, though.
That really
one
does.
And four.
Yeah, 1-4. I really kind of undersold that one. I was ready for your pick.
I'm going to go to the SEC on Saturday at 2:30, LSU versus South Carolina. South Carolina, the home team, currently only 4 losses on the year. They have a 71.8% chance to win this. I'm going to stick with the Gamecocks to win this one.
Dylan Ski.
Oh, for my third, we move on to Sunday and CBS, where Purdue, the Boilermakers, are taking on Ohio State. And let me tell you, if there's a chance I can have to bet against Ohio State, I am taking it. Give
Ohio
me Purdue.
Ohio State Buckeyes.
technically, it's the Ohio
State.
My bad. And that's exactly why I'm choosing Purdue.
Yeah, my bad. I hope I don't get copyright law.
We made it through last week. Anyway, Sunday, another game on Sunday at 11 on ESPN. The biggie is South Florida hosting Florida Atlantic. And honestly, the stats look pretty similar. I don't think it's quite as lopsided as ESPN says at 71.5. But I do in fact think that Florida Atlantic will win and not be upset here.
Steve, with the Saturday 1 o'clock on ESPN Plus, BYU and Oklahoma State. BYU is the favorite, and that's who Steve Cease is going with at 79.2%, just under the wire. They're not taking any chances this week for a up pick. Ben?
I am going to the Ivy League, probably the matchup of the season thus far. Yale has yet to lose a conference game. They're going against Princeton, who is currently the favorite at home at 66.4%. But I'm going to say Yale sticks it to 8-0 in conference as a down pick, and they're going to beat the Princeton Tigers.
I keep forgetting myself. Also on Sunday, 5:30, Big Ten Network, keeping the Big Ten theme. I'm just going to keep hating on Minnesota today. Rutgers is visiting Minnesota, where Minnesota is favored 66.9%. Rutgers is my pick as a down. The only reason is because I wish it was against the spread, because if you guys ever see that guy on TikTok during football season who would always talk about how Rutgers always covered. Oh. It was put the house on Rutgers spread because matter what, they will cover. And this is not football, and this is not football, but I'm going to do it anyway. Rutgers to beat Minnesota.
Well, there we go. For my fourth one, I'm going with the Evansville, Illinois State game on Sunday.
Nice.
At 2. I'm, of course, repping the Birds and saying Illinois State. They are currently the 64% chance to win, so that's the up there, and I'm repping the Redbirds here. I think the Redbirds definitely got that one.
Good pick. And Braden Fogerson?
For me, this one was hard because K-State made my week a week ago. Not this past week, but the first week in which they beat Kansas. But in their past 5 games, it's the only game they've been able to win. And they're going up against TCU. K-State favored by 51%. I think TCU is going to beat them here.
All right, we move on to Steve's next pick. I believe this is his 5th of 6. Yep, it's his Valley pick. Belmont and UIC on Sunday. UIC is the favorite at 59%, but he's going with Belmont,
same
a scrappy
here
team who lost to the Redbirds earlier this season, but they're looking to bounce back against UIC. Braden, you're filling in right there with the same as?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know Steve's reasoning, but I feel like this is a very even matchup that's only favored toward UIC because mm-hmm. they're the home team, and
yeah.
I think Belmont has much better roster for
careless,
this game.
Careless Valley line. Ben?
Yeah, I'm going back to the Pac-12. I love the late-night Saturday Pac-12 games. Going to have a little cross-state rivalry in Oregon and Oregon State. The favorite is Oregon because they are at home. I'm taking the Beavers. They've had a tough year.
Beavis.
Oregon's been a little back and forth this season, so that is my third down pick.
Move on to on FS1 on Sunday at 2, another Big Ten. Northwestern is visiting Indiana, one of the chapels of college basketball. Northwestern's favored at 55%. That feels like a coin flip. I'm going with Indiana. Northwestern just lost one of their best guys, Ty Berry, with a torn meniscus. He was averaging 12 points in the season and on the road against Indiana in a very close matchup. I cannot count out the Hoosiers.
For me, I am going with Vermont versus Maine on Saturday, February 17th. I actually have a little bit of a funny reason for this. Both of those teams play in NCAA hockey. And let me tell you, Vermont loses a lot. at least I've seen them lose to Maine a lot, and they're also in my division. They play in my roller league, and they're also really bad in that league. So I have to bet against Vermont, and they have the up there. So I'm betting for Maine. They have 67% for Vermont. I'm going with the down for Maine there.
Look at that. We'll skip Fogerson because you provided your pick with Steve's pick as well, right?
Mm.
We'll move on to Steve's last pick Sunday as well. He's getting all of his done in the weekend. 1 o'clock on CBS, Chattanooga versus Furman. Chattanooga is favored at 52%, a coin flip. Steve's going with the opposite tails side. Would have lost in the Super Bowl. He goes with Furman on the down. And we move on to my pick. That is one of his only other downs. I am going with my Valley game for my last pick. It's Wednesday at 7 o'clock on ESPN+. You and I versus Illinois State. No, not you and I playing them. The team Northern Iowa playing Illinois State. And you and I is favored 56.8%. I loved what I saw from ISU against the Sycamores. You and I, a scrappy team this year, but not unbeatable. And maybe we'll get into it next week when we have a little bit more time. But I don't think anyone is unbeatable after we saw Illinois State beat Indiana State. Anything can happen in the Arch Madness tournament. Starts right here against you and I.
Going to Wednesday, I also picked my Valley game, Murray State versus Southern Illinois. Southern Illinois, the favorite at home at 70%. It's my last up pick. And my MVC game, I am taking the Saluskis. Saluskis? How do you say that?
Salukis.
Salukis. I always say it wrong.
Close enough.
For my final pick, I chose Georgia facing Florida. Florida with the 60%. Likelihood.
I liked this game.
I'm going with Georgia. I think Georgia definitely has a shot there on the down.
All right, Fogerson.
Last pick of the week. I've got Tennessee beating Missouri, who is 0-11 in conference play. Missouri, I mean, it's a 90.4 in favor of Tennessee. I don't think they're turning things around this time.
Hey, big shout out to Detroit Mercy, who got their first win last night.
And the single fan that stormed the court.
Yes, that was so awesome.
The dudes fan. Rock. I kept seeing that on Twitter. One guy stormed the court. The Detroit Mercy Titans, 1-26 in the season. They beat the IUPUI Jaguars at 6-21 in the season. They floored them. They floored them good. They got them 81-66.
College basketball is the best.
Can you really call it storming a court? I mean, you
can. No,
you
it's storming. That man, that man
that's,
is.
That's a streaker.
That's not a streaker.
Yo, where's security?
That's not really storming the court. Hey, it's more people than storm the court in the first time the Redbirds won the Horton game. I still wish we got to storm the court. I called the game, so I couldn't have, but I wish the fans got to storm the court. They lined up the ROTC because they didn't want anyone storming the court. We would have. We would have. Absolutely would have. We move on to our third segment. Braden Fogerson had the opportunity to sit down with two of our Redbirds softball players. We'll be right back.
Back here, it's 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. If you're just joining us, you're 30 minutes late because we had an early start. That's because we've got ISU women's basketball later on tonight, here starting at 6:30. But right now, we've got an interview. I was able to talk with a couple of ISU Redbirds, third baseman Jaden Standish, as well as outfielder Kaylee Chevelle. Both of those upperclassmen ready for their final season as an ISU Redbird, and I was able to talk to them about their previous week. They're 0-5 heading into this weekend's event, in which they're going to start by facing BYU on the road. But 0-5, we talked at the beginning about how that's kind of been a theme as of late, and Jaden Standish was able to give me an explanation for what they can take away from this portion of their schedule.
I think that the scrimmaging against each other all fall kind of prepares us for only our pitchers, which is hard. So as we get into playing other teams, it kind of takes us a while to figure out kind of our groove with our starters. So I will say I think we kind of start off to a slower, rockier start in the beginning. We are also playing Power 5 schools, so it really prepares us for conference by the time conference rolls around. But I think within the first few tournaments, first few weeks, first games, we kind of adjust pretty quickly and figure out who we're playing with and who's behind us, who's in front of us, who needs what. So I think within the next few weeks, we'll really get our stuff good going.
And what's fun about preseason is playing these big teams, you're able to challenge yourself more offensively, defensively, and you'll be put in situations that it's sometimes in conference play, we won't even see. Like, we already went into extra innings, did international tiebreaker that you probably will not see until playoffs for conference, or even do they do international for anything? World Series? No, just extras? No.
Yeah.
So, like, we're just already being put under all these game-like pressures that it's really hard at times in practice to replicate. So that's the nice part about these having these tournaments so early on, is to be able to get in that game mode and everything you've been working on in practice, being able to really put that on the softball field.
And another thing going on, you know, this early in the season with it being winter, you don't really have any choice but to be in places like Florida last week, Arizona this week. What do you think about how, you know, being in Illinois, and you obviously can't have any home crowds yet, but just being able to go to some nice warm areas, you know, is that kind of a nice thing to you? Is it kind of a lot just in terms of travel?
I think it's amazing being able to travel to Florida, Arizona. We've gone to Louisiana in the past and whatnot, and being able to be on dirt and on grass versus before we even had the indoor, we'd be on rubber flooring scrimmaging. Now we have the turf, which is amazing, but being able to be out in the open is just a whole different type of advantage versus some MVC teams. Their first tournaments are indoor, like you and I host a tournament all the time, and then it gives us that advantage that other teams do not have. And also with our parents, we travel very well, and it's really nice that our parents are able to come and support us when we're in all these warm places.
I'll also say that I feel like it strengthens our ability to play on the road when conference comes around, because we have for a month straight, we've played on the road. And I think that it helps us to kind of get comfortable being uncomfortable, because we have no choice but to, like you said, go to Florida, go to Arizona. So I feel like in a way it kind of benefits us in the long run. Obviously we don't get to play outdoors year round, so we do spend a lot of January inside, but we're grateful to have the dome now, so that's been huge for us to be able to continue to scrimmage inside and work on our craft. But yeah, I feel like it's not too much of a burden for us, honestly.
And back here, still with ISU senior Jaden Standish, as well as grad student Kaylee Chevelle here on the Red Zone podcast. The next question I want to ask you guys, since you guys were already kind of bringing it up, you know, the change with having a new practice facility, has that kind of improved the feeling of, you know, having nice facilities for you versus what you had? Did you already kind of have nice facilities? You know, what's the change having a whole new place that you can practice in?
For a defense perspective, now we can have basically an entire field without any sort of obstacles. Like in Horton Fieldhouse, we would have a whole field, but then you'd obviously have to watch out for people walking through the field house and then worry about softball hitting one of the cage-like railings. And so being able to work and practice in the indoor practice facility gives infielders and outfielders so much more range, and we're able to really test out how far our range goes with balls defensively.
Yeah, it's really been huge for us this fall to be able to continue practicing as if we were outside. I mean, it also benefits us too when we go on the road and we play in stadiums that have turf fields like Evansville. It's nice to already have that experience of turf because we have been practicing on it for a month. So it's honestly been awesome.
Now I want to talk a little bit more individually, because, you know, Jaden, you're at third base. People watch baseball, they already call it the hot corner because you don't have a whole lot of time to adjust to, you know, a ball, you know, if it's flying right at you and then just immediately throwing it across the diamond. You know, in softball, the bases are 30 feet even shorter than that. Like, you know, how do you stay prepared for every pitch and make an adjustment when
balls are flying at you so quickly.
I think our pitchers do a great job of getting weak contact. This weekend, I don't think I had a single rocket down to me at third base. It was all ground balls, playable balls, stuff that our defense can work with. Our coaches also prepare us really well in practice by hitting those hard shots at us, making us kind of react under pressure and make those big plays. But like I said, our pitching staff does a great job, so I don't get a whole lot of that hot corner, like you would say, because they get a lot of that weak contact for us.
And, you know, for you, Kaylee, as a part in the lineup, like what is your, what are you focusing on in practice to show that, you know, your coaching staff can trust that there's specific spots maybe they can put you in the lineup that they can rely on you on? And what are your main focuses offensively that if a coach wants to be able to lean on you, they can expect these sort of outcomes most often?
We really like to focus on a phrase we like to say, like, do your job. It's about taking responsibility and being adaptable in the box. And especially as a two hitter, there's multiple roles and your roles always change throughout the game, because obviously the first inning I'm hitting second. So you'll have to see more pitches. You'll have to really be able to read the pitcher and give certain information and feedback back to your teammates. But then towards the end of the game, my role will change. And so being able to be adaptable in practice and understanding when certain roles are needed during the certain aspects of the game is very crucial.
Kaylee is one of our most consistent hitters, and I think that having her in the front of the lineup is huge for us. It allows us to see a lot of pitches, allows us to get that confidence knowing that she's going to put a bat on the ball every time she's in there. So kind of helps us in the middle of the lineup to the end of the lineup, kind of see what the pitcher's throwing and build confidence in the rest of our staff, knowing that we can do that too. So
sure. Is there any sort of, like, how does communication work? You know, say a pitcher's drop ball isn't working on a certain day, or, you know, how do you guys communicate with each other to let each other know as teammates, you know, what they can expect when they go, you know, into the box, and, you know, what you're seeing from opposing pitchers?
I would say all about, every person has a different way of explaining how their at-bats go or what pitches they can identify and whatnot. And so it's really important to just talk about the break of the pitch to help you decide whether she's throwing a drop ball or a curveball, screwball, whatnot. And then also playing into mind, since we've had so many at-bats under our belts, it's easy, I would say easier for us as you get older to be able to explain to each other, like, the speed and movement of pitches so that we can really help benefit each batter in our lineup.
You know, another question I would like to be able to touch on would be your schedule, because, you know, this is, if I'm correct, this should be both of your last years. Like, you guys will have your senior day this year, things like that.
Yeah, so sad.
Sadly. Yeah.
Is there, you know, with one more season left to go, is there any games, you know, for example, playing the University of Michigan in Kentucky or facing a ranked team in Arkansas, you know, are there certain teams that you guys are looking forward to being able to play this year?
Personally, I'm excited to get back at Michigan again. We have an opportunity to play them again in the next few weeks. And after playing them this past weekend and it being a really close game, something that we honestly should have won, I'm excited to take another stab at them.
I would think, looking back at our performance as a whole, from our very first tournament we just played, we're playing good softball, and being able to bring both sides of the games together confidently for us, it's going to be very exciting to see how MVC play goes, because I'm really excited to come back and really get the job done when MVC and that tournament comes around.
And still here with ISU leaders and Jaden Standish and Kaylee Chevelle here on the Red Zone podcast. And you know, now I want to be able to transition to, you know, your leadership as, you know, upperclassmen. You've got a good set of freshmen and newcomers to the team, and, you know, they're likely going to be looking up to a lot. You know, how does that role work for you guys? What have you been able to do so far in getting to know your new teammates and getting to lead them?
I think it's important for us as a team to spend a lot of time together on and off the field. I think we build relationships quickly. When you spend that much time with a group of girls, you get close and you build relationships and make memories. And I think sports kind of bring the best out of friendships like that. So I think it's just really important for us as leaders to make sure that those friendships are happening, those memories are happening, everyone's having fun while they're getting a quality experience here. I feel like that's one of our biggest things as leaders, not only being role models, but just making sure that everyone's having a quality experience. And I mean, if there's issues, we take care of it, but we really don't have those. We have a great group of girls who, like Kaylee said, get the job done on and off the field. So it makes our life easy.
Yeah, our team is a very easy group of girls. We have, what's really great about our young players is that they're not afraid to ask questions. And so since we are like between young and old mixture here, it's really nice that I have players coming up to me asking me certain questions about their roles in certain positions, or like in the outfield, we always talk about making like backing each other up and leaning on each other in tough times and whatnot. And so with this team, it's very easy to lead, and everyone in this team too is very capable of leading, and everyone has their own way of leading, which is nice.
You know, moving from Coach Fisher to Coach Kramos last year, you know, you have a whole year under your belt with a new coaching staff. Well, not a new coaching staff. I mean, Kramos was already a coach for you. Was it a tough transition at all to move from one head coach to the next, or was it more because you already knew her and everything, that did it go smoothly? How did that work?
I think it went very smoothly. Coach Kramos has been with Melinda for 20 plus years, I think. So they are very similar in their coaching style. Like you said, we knew her. We knew how she was going to be as a coach. We already had relationships with her and the rest of the staff. So honestly, it was a very smooth transition. She's been great for us. So yeah, we love her.
Yeah, Tina has been great. I would say what's fun about when we knew Tina as an assistant coach, we knew more about Melinda's main ideas. And now Tina can bring out some of these ideas of the games and like her beliefs in the game that we saw through Melinda, but now Tino is able to really teach us some other things that we might have not known already. And it wasn't a bad transition at all because of Tina and Melinda being on the same staff for so many years together. So for all the players who are returning now playing for Tina, it was very easy to do. And everyone was very excited for what the new chapter would hold.
One of the three WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation. Let's give a thank you to Jane Standish and Kaylee Cheval for their interview with Braden Fulgerson. We're looking forward to that Redbird softball season getting underway soon. Speaking of great Redbird women's teams, we're going to throw it over to Seth Q Arena right now. Jameson Warfield and Logan O'Brien join us live from Seth Q Arena, where the Redbirds are going to take on USC Flames tonight. Gentlemen, how are you doing? Doesn't appear we can get it from them, so we'll hold up a second. Ben, first and foremost, why don't you tell me what we're waiting to hear from them about the weekend for the Redbirds basketball team?
Yeah, it was a tough weekend for the Birds for sure. Going into Iowa, trying to take on UNI and Drake, and they ended up losing both games by almost a pretty big blowout, something that we did not expect out of the Birds. We were talking so highly about them last week and the run that they were kind of going on here, but two tough losses to two teams you definitely want to beat, but trying to get back on track tonight against UIC at home.
All right,
the Birds have yet to lose at home, I don't think.
I think we got them now. Jameson and Logan, can you hear us?
Yeah, we can hear you guys.
Awesome. Well, you guys are on air now on the Red Zone. We appreciate your standing by. And Ben, I completely agree with that about last weekend. They talked all about how they were ready to go sweep in Iowa, and then unfortunately it just didn't go their way. So we start there with Jameson and Logan coming back home after a two-game skid. What can you expect tonight from this Redbird women's team?
Yeah, absolutely. Really tough skid there. I mean, that can happen when you're away and you kind of lose track of what you need to be doing. And I think that first half deficit that they had last week, you got to be able to fight all halves, you know?
We appreciate hearing from you guys. Logan O'Brien, how's it going over there?
It's going good. I'm excited to kick it off, get it going here, you know, just watch the game and watch the energy the women bring.
We appreciate it. A lot of energy in the arena tonight ahead of the game time?
Not too bad. You know, people are still funneling in. The marching band is going crazy. They're doing good. But, you know, it feels good. Vibes are right.
All right, we'll leave you be after just one more. Jameson, I'll go back to you real quick. Who's somebody you think we should be looking out for on the Redbird side tonight?
Well, the clear answer for me is Maya Wong. You know, Kristen Gillespie has said that they've needed a leader this year, and Maya Wong has absolutely stepped into that role. We've seen her go from 7.7 points per game to 11.8 points per game. Pretty incredible, and this team needs a leader in her tonight.
All right, well, we appreciate it, guys. We'll leave you to it for some prep before the game. Coming up at 6:25, Riley Klump joins in the studio along with Jameson and Logan for some Redbird basketball. If you could hear them at the game, we appreciate them checking in. But first, we got about 5 minutes to end the show. We were debating what we want to talk about, so we'll start with a few little random things. First and foremost, an incredible big game last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really be good.
Yeah, I mean, an all-time classic, right? It didn't feel like that way the way that it started, and it was just, me and you were talking about it, it was like a boxing match at first. It was two really good defenses, two great quarterbacks, and they were just kind of feeling each other out up until Usher came on for a so-so halftime show.
Yeah,
for,
exactly.
If you guys might agree with me.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
Once the second half started, it turned into an all-time classic. You can never count out Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. And they are back-to-back big game champs, and now that's ring number three for Patty Mahomes.
I think sometimes people can use lack of offense as an excuse to, you know, not really pay attention to the game and just assume that it's not very exciting. But when you had two teams that knew how good their opponents were and they were slugging it out, they were, you know, having some big defensive plays and things like that and making it really a struggle for either team to score. To see two very, very high-powered offense, both stagnated by really good defensive planning. You know, I really appreciated being able to see that in the first half, and then it was nice to be able to get to see more of that shootout action in the second half for those that did like the offense.
And then, of course, we would be remiss not to mention this events that happened yesterday, unfortunately, in Kansas City. A day that was meant to be so celebratory turned so dark at the end of the Kansas City Chiefs victory parade and rally, a shooting that injured more than 20 and unfortunately killed one woman. It's a sad situation when that's what we're having to talk about as the bookend to a wonderful weekend for the Kansas City Chiefs. But our thoughts and prayers and condolences are with those affected and those related.
Kind of mention something else that's still on
that wavelength.
On the cusp of football, not necessarily where you are.
No,
at,
I think what you're saying, yeah.
How about that? This is completely different. It's a video game, actually.
Oh, yeah.
If we're okay with going.
No, it's
there.
Okay. It's a fine switch. Yeah. We just wanted to give that in there really quick.
NCAA football is back.
Yes.
That trailer today was that it just gave me chills.
Yes.
One of the greatest games of all time. It's finally coming back this summer, and I'm just so excited for it.
Yes,
I don't
that
know
trailer
if you guys
was awesome.
Play it as well. So, cool trailer and full reveal in May. So.
And speaking of video games, did you guys see that MLB 9 innings jerseys are now like officially MLB licensed jerseys?
Yeah, we'll end with that. We've kind of been throwing it around the bases here. So obviously our thoughts are with Kansas City on both their Super Bowl win and then the situation that happened. Ben is right about the video game and how excited we all are for that. And we'll end with that. These MLB jerseys, man.
They're so bad.
Yeah.
They're so ugly. And like everyone knows, not only, like, we can't see how they feel. Until someone buys it, no one knows how they feel. Some people really like them, but it's not something that you should force people into, a completely brand new jersey. You should have people either opt in or out of whether they like the old style or the new. But
the backs of these jerseys, man, like the circle that you're making out of someone's last name, like right. the whole like Jared Saltalamacchia, like just trying to fit each letter right. in deal for like a four letter name is just so bad and so dumb.
Somebody posted Justin Verlander's jersey and it was just such an arch and it's such a normal length last name. It was like, can you imagine like D. Gordon Strange right now or like
think about Saltalamacchia. Armstrong when he's coming
Kerr up. Armstrong, yeah. exactly. Or Encarnacion Strand, like there's hyphenated names in the MLB that are they just going to make a circle around the numbers?
And it's funny because it's so weird how they're doing it because for the big last names, it looks so dumb. And then there's a name like Ian Happ who's only four letters
really
and
small.
It's tiny. So, and I know one of my one White Sox friend, Liam Lyons, I don't even know why I'm saying that, member of ZND, he said that this is going to be the third year in a row with a new Luis Robert Jr. jersey because for that he was Robert. Year after that, he changed to Robert Jr., and now this year it's Robert Jr., but all curved out. So,
man, I tell him to stop buying White Sox jerseys more than anything. Who knows who's going to make it through the next couple of years, Liam? I don't even have to tell you to tell him. It's Liam Lyons. We can tell him right here on the radio. Boys, I appreciate another great episode of the Red Zone. Stick it right here, WZND Sports Night on the radio. Riley Klump joining as the studio host, Logan and JMO from the game. Have a great night. Go Redbirds.
This has been Red Zone.
Robinson looking out, drives inside, going to find Mary Crofton for her first three of the day, and it's good!
Curry owned the league last year, and personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
JD, I've got...